What happens is people, consumers, transition from those more luxurious, more expensive living arrangements into more affordable living arrangements. But they don't want to be in the war zones, right? They want affordability, but they don't want to get shot. That's where we want to be. We want to be in those product types that are affordable for first-time home buyers, because that gives us a level of insulation. Now, there's a couple other things kind of, you know, our market specifically, you know, why do we feel it's insulated? Well, one, it's more affordable compared to the rest of the country.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Brandon Cobb is a CEO at HBG Capital and an expert real estate consultant and investor. He's here to share some actionable advice about using real estate investing as a way to create passive income. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Sam, I appreciate you having me. Love the energy, man.
Hey, man. Pleasure's all mine. Three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So medical device sales rep turned real estate developer. If you'd asked me 7 years ago that I'd be building houses, I'd have looked at you like you had six heads. I never expected myself to jump into real estate, but found myself unemployed. Got sat down one Friday at a Starbucks, fired. And I'll kind of save you the story from there to here now. What are we doing now? Well, you know, when you've got some discretionary income, you're looking to invest it and grow it, but inflation's crazy and there's 20 different investment vehicles out there and you're wanting something that's designed to be insulated against market volatility, what we do is we put investors' capital into recession-resistant real estate designed to be insulated against the market volatility for them to get passive income straight to their bank account. That's two of the three. What's that third one? My ADHD kicked in.
You're good. Where'd you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
How did we get there? Well, it's been a long journey. So got fired from my job. Started wholesaling, flipping houses, and basically took all the profits the first 3 years and dumped it back into coaching, mentorship, mastermind programs, rooms with people smarter than me. And that's what I would contribute to growing as fast as we did. Just constant reinvestment in myself. Maybe we can touch base on that and do a little deep dive for your audience if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have one question, though. They took you out to Starbucks. They bought you coffee to fire you. That's a step up, man. Most people don't get that.
He actually didn't buy me coffee there. That's just where he wanted to meet on the Friday at 4 o'clock.
Oh, that's brutal. I was hoping for at least a cup of coffee out of the deal. It would have been nice. Tell me this, though. I mean, what was the jump? Like, how did you end up saying, all right, got fired? And then how did you say, okay, real estate? What was the delay there? How did you end up picking it? Talk to me about that.
I'm going to be honest, I had like a motivational blog I was working on. I'm a big Tony Robbins fan, always have been. I was working on a course to help people break into medical device sales because I was, you know, all the people were like, what are you good at? What do you do? And I'm like, well, heck, I got into here. I've had a lot of people reach out to me. Maybe there's an opportunity here. Read a ton of books over the years. Real estate investing was one of them. And so I was doing all these different things and went to a bunch of different meetups. And ended up meeting a guy who would, you know, become my mentor for a little bit. He's my partner to this day. But that was the first thing that took off. And so when I learned, okay, wow, this is the first thing that's got the ability to produce income for me, I just cut all the other things off and focused strictly on that. And that's how I decided on real estate.
That's awesome. Today, you guys are building affordable new construction for first-time home buyers. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
You've gone from wholesaling all the way to... Are you building brand new communities? Are you building just ground up whole neighborhoods at a time?
Yeah, we are doing that. And, you know, I've struggled to come up with a word for what we do, because when I use the word affordable, people think it's Section 8 or low income government housing. Like, that is not what we're focused on at all. Right now, the country has a huge problem. The most undersupplied, highest demand real estate product in the country right now is affordable homes for first-time home buyers, right? Nobody can find something that's affordable to move into. And so that's what we focused on here in Middle Tennessee, is delivering those products aimed towards first-time home buyers.
What does affordable mean? I mean, is there a dollar, you know, you're here in Middle Tennessee, is there a dollar amount that you say, okay, we can build it for X, somebody can afford a payment of Y? When you say affordable, can you give some color to that?
Yeah, typically with a first-time home buyer family, you know, combined incomes are right at about six figures, maybe a little bit less. And so they're able to afford $400,000 less. That's kind of our bread and butter. Now, we've got a small portion of our portfolio that does go above that. But while we consider it, you know, recession resistant still, even though it might not fall in the word affordable, is our cost basis is really low. In other words, we've got like eight homes that are we'll probably sell them for 700 grand, but our cost basis is like $380,000 in them. So there's a huge runway that those prices could hit. And so we would consider that recession resistant if it can take almost a 50% hit.
Okay, cool. So $400,000 or less, if you have a dual income family making roughly, you know, 100 grand a year between the two of them, that then becomes affordable housing. Are there programs or things that you guys are working with that you're putting all these people into? Are they using the first time FHA home buyers plan? What's that look like?
Yeah, so that's who's driving the market, are these FHA loans, these first-time home buyers. I mean, that is the largest portion of the market that is buying homes. As far as programs, we've partnered with some local mortgage brokers that do that. You know, we don't do that in-house. We can make the necessary introductions to the people that they need to know, but that's not something that we're, you know, outfitted to do for people.
Right, right. Tell me about, I mean, the iterations of your business. How did you end up getting into development? I mean, again, medical device sales, now developer, like that's a lot of different kind of steps along the way. Why did you pick development versus, you know, doing what a lot of other people, you know, buying existing stock, things like that? Talk to us about that.
Blue oceans. So anybody that's flipping houses right now or wholesaling, you're probably going on 10 appointments to close one deal. You're probably seeing a lot of stupid green new money coming in, buying stuff that's outpricing you. You're probably feeling your margins get squeezed. Gosh, when we went from flipping houses, we were making, you know, 30, 40 grand a house on a 250, maybe $285,000 home. 4 years ago, it was, you know, probably making 30, 35 grand on a $350,000 to $380,000 home, right? Same profit margin, much more expensive home. That squeezes your margin. When you're starting to get doing 8%, 10% margin deals, like that's just too much risk in my opinion. You know, that market takes a hit in that 4 or 5, 6 month period. You know, that's concerning. So we had accidentally done some new construction projects, probably 7 or 8 over a few years while we were flipping houses. And, you know, you show up, it's a tornado damaged home, or, you know, it halfway burnt down. And we're like, well, we can buy this for less than what the land's worth. Let's kind of give this a shot. And the light bulb went off one day where we had this one home that we were doing new construction on, this one home that was just our problem child. It was a full gut rehab. And we built that fire damaged home faster than we rehabbed the full gut rehab. And we made like 3 times more money on the new build than we did flipping that home. And we said, wait a minute. So we did a tactical pause and said, there's something here. What if we just scrapped all the house flipping, shut off all the marketing, and just shut down that whole division of the business and just focused on self-generation and going after these sellers that have a lot of land? What would that look like? And so that's exactly what we did. So we pivoted. We probably reduced overhead by like 25%. I mean, we were doing like $35,000 a month in marketing, shut all that down, pivoted to just doing new construction. And when we did, we went literally almost overnight from having more money than we could find deals for to now we have way more deals than we'll ever be able to finance. So the pivot, Achilles heel of the business right now is just capital and getting that caught up to the rest of the business.
Right. Yeah. So tell me about that. I mean, you said you're going after sellers with land. There's a lot of moving parts there. Can you kind of break down how your business is implemented? I mean, you find somebody with land. How do you know you can get utilities there? How do you know you can get it entitled? How do you know that? I mean, that seems like a really niche skill set to develop.
Yeah, it is. There's a learning curve, but the way to offset any big task is just partner with people that know what they're doing, right? I mean, that's all there is to it. And we weren't completely green to new construction when we started, right? We'd done 7 or 8 projects. So we had a taste for the utilities and putting stuff in. So we kind of knew what we were doing, but, you know, doing a bigger land development project, like by putting 36 townhomes in, you know, definitely different, but, you know, luckily we had the right partners and the right people to kind of guide us along the way. So they say that there's riches in the niches, right? So we really niched down, whereas, you know, a wholesaler flipper is probably sending, you know, 40,000 mailers out to like an absentee list and kind of doing the spray and pray method. We boiled things down to a very niche target list of people that we knew we could help. And over the years, we had paid our dues. We learned, we'd failed, we'd made a lot of mistakes. But that knowledge enabled us to understand how we needed to entitle the land, what due diligence we needed to do, right? So the cool thing about Middle Tennessee is it's very government friendly. In other words, government's not shutting things down when a big virus comes. And two, they want the density. So it's not like California where it takes 2 years to get things permitted. So everything that we put under contract, we don't buy until we have either a final plat approved or we've got a permit. So that reduces the risk of making a bad investment. Sure. So when we boil down and realize we need to be going after people that own a lot of land and cultivating relationships with those people, that's what we did. And so as we closed on these deals over time, we built these relationships with people that had a lot of this land. And so now we just get referrals generated to us. So we have a $0 marketing spend. And again, we've got more people throwing deals at us than we'll be able to buy.
How do you find land in an area where they want density? Like, it seems like those two are kind of like, obviously the city expands at a certain pace and it'll catch itself up. But is there like, are you on the fringes going, okay, you know, as this expands out, we want to be right in front of that by a certain, like, it just seems like that's, I don't know, a nebulous way of defining what it is that you want.
Here's what we did. We went to all the tertiary markets kind of around Davidson County. Davidson County is the core county in Nashville. And we knew we wanted to be there because COVID just created this huge migration to these surrounding counties. I mean, that was where the opportunity was. And we went and we got meetings with the district councilman. We met with the mayors. We met with the building commissioners. And we brought a map and we said, hey, we want to work with you. Right. Where do you want density? Where would you support rezones? Where do you want to see houses? What are your needs? Do you need condos? Do you need single family homes? What types of homes do you need? And when we had those conversations, one, their eyes popped up. They're like, wow, no one's ever come to us and asked us this. And so we literally took a map and, like, you know, we're sitting down with the, you know, the mayor of White Bluff, a little suburb of Nashville. And she's like, you know, this is what we need. This is where we need it. And we just reverse engineered. And that's where we went. So we went to the areas that the city wanted to see density.
Right.
And then we just got laser focused. We were looking for those areas with road frontage, with access to sewer. You know, the city will give you all the sewer maps and the water maps and all that stuff. And we started cultivating those relationships and we started bringing them deals in those areas. And they're like, wow, you actually did what we asked you to do. This is pretty cool. Then they became very interested in working with us. And so now they'll actually refer us deals. So that's what we did. We just went to the horse's mouth and said, what do you want? Went and gave it to him.
Right. That's really, really smart. Again, you know, like you said, meeting with the mayor and everybody else, like, that's just the step that nobody's taking, right? That is, at least not many people are doing that. Most of the time, that's a very adversarial type of deal where it's like, hey, I want to build XYZ project. And they're like, no, you can't build XYZ project. And then it becomes just an adversarial versus a collaborative relationship. So
it's not, you know, and it might be tougher to get access to the mayor of like Davidson County, right? Sure. You know, 900,000 residents. But again, we're talking about the tertiary, the suburbs. They'll meet with you. You can walk in almost same day, catch them during lunch or something. They want to meet with you because they want the tax dollars. They want the revenue. And so it was a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about the risks involved in what you guys are doing. There were in 2007-08, saw a lot of builders, saw a lot of people just go completely belly up. What do you guys see as the runway for your business? What are some risks associated with it? And how are you mitigating those?
Yeah, great question. So I'll explain what the risks are and then what we're doing to mitigate the risk. So obvious risk up front is going to be the prices of homes, right? So if the prices of home take a nosedive, then that's an obvious risk to the sales price of the homes. Sure. How do we mitigate that? We buy these very deep discounted deals. So most of our deals are underwritten at a 66, 67% loan to value. We look for 20, 25% gross margins. In other words, I'm talking about after all the hard and soft costs are taken care of, we should be able to take a 25% hit and still be completely fine. Now, one other thing that we're doing to mitigate it is we manage everything in-house. So we're not relying on another builder to build the homes for us, like a lot of investors. We're not relying on someone to find the deals for us. We do everything in-house. What that does is it aligns the builder's initiatives with the investors, right? So there's an alignment there, and we're building them a lot quicker than a builder normally would. So, you know, typically on all of our spec, we're in and out in 10 months or less. So, you know, the market, you know, what are the odds the market's going to take a 25% hit in that time period? You know, could it? Yeah, anything's possible. Likely, probably not. And then again, it also comes back to our niche. When there is a market contraction, the need to live is still there. People still need housing. What happens is people, consumers, transition from those more luxurious, more expensive living arrangements into more affordable living arrangements. But they don't want to be in the war zones, right? They want affordability, but they don't want to get shot. That's where we want to be. We want to be in those product types that are affordable for first-time home buyers, because that gives us a level of insulation. Now, there's a couple other things kind of, you know, our market specifically, you know, why do we feel it's insulated? Well, one, it's more affordable compared to the rest of the country, right? So people just flock to those more affordable areas, kind of what I just illustrated. The second is, man, Tennessee, Florida, huge migration after COVID. We didn't shut everything down like California, New York. People were moving their businesses here in droves, and not just because of the governments, but because of the tax initiatives too. So there's no income taxes, just like Florida. People love that. They're moving their businesses here in droves. So we have a high growth city. We manage everything in house, and we're in a product type that's insulated against market volatility.
Yeah, I love all the thoughts on that. And the other thing that people may not know, I guess, regionally, you know, I'm very familiar with Middle Tennessee. Obviously, I'm from Tennessee, but or live here in Tennessee. I'm not originally from it. I wish I were. But either way, it is that the housing stock is just old. I mean, there is an aging housing stock that is just, it's fading out. We're seeing it here in Memphis where it's like, gosh, I mean, you know, 80 to 100 year old homes, that's an 80 to 100 year old home. We need new housing stock coming online. Yeah. And so I think that's the other thing. When you're having that increased demand and also this kind of just aging out of stock, I mean, there's places now in Memphis where you just, it's time to tear it down. It is, especially in Middle Tennessee, that story is there as well. So I think, you know, you've got yet further tailwinds to what you guys are doing. How are investors getting involved with your business? I mean, it sounds like a pretty fast process here. You know, if it's a 10-month turn, are you guys developing a fund and they come in and invest in the fund and that way they have, you know, just evergreen exposure to what it is you guys are doing? Or what's that? How does that work for you?
Yeah, great question. So we do have a fund. So investors can invest in the fund. They get to see the projects before you invest in them. So, you know, typically we work with accredited and both non-accredited investors, a couple more steps with the non-accredited investors, but they can go to our website, hbgcapital.net. That's Harry Bob Gary, capital.net. They can sign up for an introductory call. That's the first step. There's a ton of free educational stuff we put on there that kind of explains what we do. We've got an ebook, Recession Resistant Passive Income, kind of explains what our investing thesis. So that'd be a great place to start. If you think it's a fit after you've seen some of the content, schedule a call with us. We'd love to get to know you. But that's what we're doing is we're funneling money into the fund. They get to see the products that we're going to put out beforehand. And, you know, a lot of our investors are local. So it's kind of cool being able to drive them around and actually showing them the projects.
Right, right. Yeah. So they get in the fund. I'm just really just curious because this is different than a lot of the guests that come on the show where it's a syndication. Hey, we know it's a 5-year plan. When somebody puts the money into the fund, how long are they in that fund? And what's a typical return profile look like? Or what are you shooting for? I'm just really curious the kind of mechanics of how your fund works because it's different than a lot of the things we hear about.
Yeah, so we compartmentalize everything, right? So syndications, we've done syndications before for some nuanced deals, but everything is compartmentalized. So all the money goes into the fund, right? Or a syndication opportunity, but it's separated. So money goes in, it's spoken for, we invest capital into specific deals. Hmm. And then once that's done, it's done, right? If we raise any more money, it's going to go into another set of deals. So we structure it where 100% of all the returns or the distributions flow to the investors until they get their return of capital back and their return on capital. And then our firm will profit on the remaining homes. Usually the first 30% of the homes that sell, all the investors are completely paid off. And then our firm profits on the remaining 70% of the homes. That's how we've got it structured.
Got it. So when somebody gets in the fund, you might have a development of, say, you know, 20 townhomes or whatever it is. I'm just making stuff up here. And like, okay, this is what we're raising for. It's a 20 townhome. It goes in the fund, then it gets deployed. And then and that's the end of that. It's like syndication-esque, but in a fund model.
Yep, that's basically it. If it's a development deal, usually we say that's a 24-month turnaround. We'll raise money for phase one. Once phase one is done, that's all the horizontal work, roads, infrastructure, all that stuff, usually 6 to 8 months. Right. And then we'll raise for phase two, which is the vertical. Once you do the vertical, we're usually in and out within 12 months.
Wow. Wow. Really cool. Brandon, thanks for taking the time today to break down your business, what it is you guys are doing and how you're doing it and just really how you see runway in your space. And then, you know, how you're putting deals together. And of course, the tactical tip of going and meeting, especially in these smaller tertiary markets, meeting with your local government. I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. I love it. I love the way you guys are taking stuff down and providing excellent returns for your investors. I know you gave this already, but just one more time to make sure we capture it here at the end. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So you can go to our website, hbgcapital.net. That's HarryBobGaryCapital.net. I'm all over social media. You Google Brandon Cobb, you know, HBG Capital, like corn on the cob. I'm all over. We post content every single day. Everything we do is all around value add. So we really try to educate people on what we do, and not just what we do, but, you know, how we can help them. Putting out a bunch of content that's designed to help them get to where they want to go. So follow us, like us, love us. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, Brandon. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.